Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Click of Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top-selling trades through Diamond to retailers for February 2010. And, you know, we've been talking about these numbers for longer than I can think of off the top of my head, a couple of years now, and we're still seeing very similar things. Top two publishers, ooh, big surprise, DC and Marvel. The split between them this time around, though, really very narrow, because out of the total units for the top 300 trades, DC had 28.31%, Marvel had 28.8%. So really, you know, about a quarter of a percent-ish difference between the two. You look at it by dollars, Marvel took 36.7%, DC took 28.66% of the total dollars for the top 300 trades. And again, this is two retailers going through Diamond. I want to stress that point because, I mean, there are some retailers that may be going through mass market distributors. We're not going to see their numbers here, obviously, since this is data initially reported by Diamond. But, you know, again, this is actually getting closer to kind of a quarter each versus a third each. It's kind of midway between there. But between the two, they're accounting for 56.38% of the total sales by units and 65.35% by dollars. So still those two are the big boys by a fairly decent margin, but not as much so as they are on the monthly comics side. Now, looking at the breakdown a little bit further, an even 11% went to Viz. Viz is really still doing pretty strong on the manga. Tokyo Pop doesn't seem to be doing as well because they only had 27% of the total units for the top 300 trades. And if you look at where their stuff lands on the charts, I mean, they're doing three-digit sales figures for the most part. I don't know if they're just not producing as much, if they're not producing as much of the hot stuff or what, but Viz is still doing very strong, whereas Tokyo Pop, at least this month, not so much. Dark Horse doing pretty good with 8.12% of the total units, and then Image with 5.27%. Now, one of the things that's been announced since the last time we talked, as I know you know, Chris, IDW is joining the ranks of a premier publisher. Now, in February, they did 3.04% of the total units and 3.2% of the total dollars. So they're doing, you know, about a tenth of what Marvel and DC are doing on the trade side. Certainly, you know, there's the comic side to factor in and stuff. It's going to be really interesting to see over the next year or so with things that come out that were solicited or will be solicited or whatever from the April previews when they first become premier, because I don't have that previews yet. I guess it's out, whatever. I'm going to be very interested to see if that placement and that movement in placement from the back half of previews up into the front half, if that really makes a difference or not. And this is the first time any publisher has made that jump. I can only think of one case in which a publisher has moved forward just within the back half of previews, and that was when Marcosia became AAA Marcosia, and, you know, their sales were low enough that a lot of it was hard to see in the top 300 numbers on the trade on the comic side, and there wasn't really enough data points, if any, on the trade side to get a good feel for if that would make a difference or not.
Is this going to be for the previews coming out for the June solicitations or the July?
June.
It's going to be June?
Yes.
Okay.
The very next previews that I get should have that.
Okay. Because one thing that they did announce, which they're going to have to announce a whole lot of really good properties right off the bat to get noticed, I think. And one of the things that they did announce was an ongoing Transformers, or no, Was it no ongoing Transformers and ongoing G.I. Joe, which are two of their better properties there, which I think is pretty good to see.
But I think those properties are pretty much established at IDW, and IDW's got a really bad habit of they'll come out 1 month with one thing for a property, and then the next month followed up with another half dozen.
Right.
You know, they've got the better part of a half dozen G.I. Joe titles, another half dozen Transformer titles, about another half dozen Green Hornet titles, then you've got the Doctor Who, the Star Trek, and...
Right. Well, let me give you a rundown of the... Can I run down the trades real quick of what they're offering real quick?
Sure.
They got Transformers Allspark Almanac Volume 2, Transformers Volume 1 For All Mankind, Transformers The Covers, which is going to be from the Robots in Disguise complete run of comics for $39.99, Star Trek Generation Ghosts, the trade, The Fallen Angel Omnibus, which it seems pretty intriguing, $29.99. Then they got Love and Capes Volume 2, Archie, the Classic Newspaper Comics Volume 1 from their Library of American Comics imprint. They got a Dick Tracy Volume 10. They got a Best of Dick Tracy trade coming out. A Felix the Cat Greatest comic book from Craig Yeo is in charge of that. John Sable Freelance, Little Adventures in Oz Book 2, Negative Burn. So they got some decent properties coming out, both licensed and in-house there.
They do good stuff. I mean, I really enjoyed the Star Trek stuff they do. I haven't been following the G.I. Joe or Transformers. I've read some of the Doctor Who and liked that. So, I mean, they certainly are one of the publishers I would consider, I don't want to say up and coming, they've been around 10 years.
Right.
But they're one of the ones I've always had in that kind of minor league category we've talked about a couple of times. You know, I put them in the same grouping as Boom, Dark Horse, Dynamite, and Image. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. Dark Horse and Image have been and still are premier publishers. I think what we're going to see is that if this benefits IDW in terms of sales, we may see Dynamite make a play for becoming a premier publisher and probably Boom. And probably in that order. Just because mm-hmm. Dynamite's, I think, that much bigger than Boom in some respects.
Well, Dynamite is definitely lining up. You know, since we last talked, they've gotten the full rights to do the Phantom. So I think they're lining up for making a good run of other properties, both Golden Age and maybe some licensed properties as well.
I hadn't realized about the Phantom. Bob was telling me about having bought Harris Comics and Dynamite getting out of that the Vampirella stuff.
The Vampirella, yeah, too, yeah.
And let's face it, one of the last times, not last times, but one of the times Dynamite took over a property from another publisher or whatever was The Boys, and that's done very well for them.
You know, there's a rumor that Rich Johnson was talking about, that property might be ending.
Doesn't surprise me. It's one of those that... It's almost amazing in some respects. It's worked as well as it has, as long as it has. Because let's face it, the high concept is pretty straightforward.
Right.
You know, it's just a raunchy version of superheroes to a degree. It's well done or whatever, but in lesser hands, that would have gone away within 12 issues.
Right. Well, and DC got rid of it after 5.
That was more an issue of it not fitting vision of what they want to publish.
Right. Right.
But it's funny because after that, we started to see some of the stuff in Icon and Max over at Marvel that's done reasonably well for them. And again, a bit more of a hardcore take on superheroes and stuff.
Oh, for sure. There's just one thing that I wanted to bring up regarding the lesser publishers besides DC and Marvel. I just did a quick addition between Viz, Dark Horse, Image, IDW, Tokyo Pop, and Boom Studios. If you add up their percentages, it comes out to 24.39, which that is a pretty good chunk. You know, individually, it doesn't look like a lot, but you add it all up, and they're taking a slice out of Marvel and DC.
Yeah. Well, and if you add in IDW, so we've got Viz, Dark Horse, Image, and IDW, which essentially would be kind of that premier five publishers. And really all premier means is they're in the front half of previews.
Right.
And Viz, which is the powerhouse of manga, you know, that gives you the 27.43 for Viz, Dark Horse, Image, and IDW. You add in DC and Marvel, and that's, 83.82% of the total sales for the top 300.
Right.
It's a very lopsided playing field. You've got a couple of players, DC and Marvel, that are just doing the lion's share of stuff. You've got a handful that are in kind of that middle ground that are serious contenders, but not enough to threaten the big guys, but kind of really, stand head and shoulders above the
Right.
others, which are kind of, what I, for lack of a better term, are calling kind of that farm league,
Right.
which are some really solid publishers, but they're just not, coming out with all that much stuff, which in a lot of cases I think is a really smart move. Now, something to keep in mind, though, is we've seen a couple of publishers that at one point would have been firmly in that kind of minor league area where Dark Horse, IDW, Image, Dynamite, and Boom are, that have since either fallen back into the farm league, as I call it, or just kind of dropped out entirely. CrossGen, Devil's Due.
Well, can we talk about Devil's Due real quick?
Sure.
Hackslash going to Image. Goodbye, Devil's Due. They're done.
Bob was saying the same thing, and I'll tell you the same thing I told him of yes and no in terms of is that a huge blow? Certainly. But that actually hasn't always been their top-selling book. Barak the Barbarian or whatever did reasonably well for them. They've got Jericho, they've got Spartacus, they've got Mercy Sparks, they've got a few other properties. And what I think is going to happen is that they're going to kind of be that protracted death scene of you think they're gone, but they just keep hanging on for dear life. I have a hard time seeing Devil's Due ever becoming anything like it was before.
Oh yeah.
They have neither the licenses nor the traction in the marketplace. I mean, they lost their footing.
Well, I don't know. Besides Hack Slash, I mean, that's really Seeley's property too. He can do whatever he want with that thing. It just so happened that he'd be publishing it at IDW or at Image now. He takes that with him. But what's so appealing about Devil's Due these days that if somebody even wanted to buy them out, I don't even know if anybody would want to buy their properties.
There's almost nothing to buy except Mercy Sparks.
Yeah.
Because
So.
the other properties they have are licensed properties.
Exactly.
Flip side, you could say the same thing about IDW to a certain degree. They've got, what, Lock and Key and a handful of properties.
You got their 30 Days of Night
30
stuff,
Days of, well, is that theirs or is that Steve
Niles and
Niles?
Templeton. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, but
Because a lot of what's putting IDW on the map right now is licensed properties.
right. Well, they're doing a pretty good job with their Library of American Comics imprint. They've just started the division of Craig Yeo's Yeo Books. They've teamed up with him. IDW is in much better shape than Devil's Due.
Oh, no
It's
question about that. But if they were to lose some key licenses, in other words, what I'm saying is they're really strong right now. But there was a time when Devil's Due was equally strong, or maybe not quite equally strong, but very strong as well.
Right.
But you start losing properties. You lose the Hasbro license or whatever. If you lose G.I. Joe, you lose Transformers.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you still got Angel. You still got Star Trek. You still got Doctor Who. They at least have their properties licensed out from enough different places and hopefully set on different enough schedules. They're not at risk of all of them kind of going away at one time. Dark Horse, I think, is at bigger risk for that because if they lose the Star Wars property or the Buffy property, that kind of pulls the rug out from under them to a certain degree.
I could see a company. I mean, I kind of twittered this a few months ago, and I was kind of doing predictions for fun, but I could see Devil's Due being bought like a Dynamite or even Boom, perhaps.
I can't see it.
You can't see it?
I can't see anyone. What are you buying with
Yeah.
Devil's Due? You've got a couple of licensed properties, which if you wait long enough, you could probably grab anyways. Not that I think there's this huge pent-up demand for either Jericho or Spartacus comics.
Right.
Mercy Sparks is not a bad property, but not one that I think is worth, somebody going and buying.
So what do you think it's going to be with Devil's Due in the next 12 months? Hanging on by a thread or
Hanging
gone?
on by a thread, or, Blaylock finally throwing in the towel.
Yeah. Do you
He
think
just.
Mercy Sparks will stick around? Or are they going to be the next one? If that nail in the coffin goes, then that's it, right? That's the nail in the coffin.
Can that even go? Isn't that a Blaylock
I
property?
yeah, I don't even know. I don't even know. Yeah.
Because it's one of those things that they've kind of trimmed down to about as far as they can go.
Yeah.
You know, without being gone.
Right.
But, you know, we've seen other publishers that were really strong at one point, you know, not hang around.
Right.
Now, the author of Mercy Sparks is Josh Blaylock.
Okay.
But I don't know if he owns the property or not. I'm going to assume that he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's then a question, again, can they keep Jericho and one or two of the other properties they've got?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think Barak the Barbarian is something that we're going to be reading 10 years from now.
No.
And it's not like Devil's Due has a really good track record right now of getting material out.
No, they're, yeah. But I think it's probably because all the legal hang-up lately of...
Well, yeah, you don't pay people, they get a little annoyed.
Yeah.
I mean, the losing the judgment, and it was only for, and I say only, $3,550 or somewhere in there. $3,000 or $4,000,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, is nothing to sneeze at or whatever. But in terms of a business, I mean, for an individual, it's a lot. For a business, that's not a big deal. Or let me rephrase. For a small comic publisher, it could be a huge deal. But in terms of most retail businesses or corporate businesses or whatever, it almost costs that much to open up the doors in the morning sort of thing.
Right.
I think the legal issues are a bigger deal in so much as they now have a reputation of just not paying people, making it hard to keep talent, and if you don't have talent, you can't get the books done, you can't get the books done, you can't put them out, you can't make money, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that Devil's Due hasn't folded already is part of why I think that Hackslash leaving, while a serious blow to them, because it was, again, one of their cornerstone properties... is not going to be what the final nail in their coffin. You know, it's basically going to come down to when Blaylock says he's just had enough and moves on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. It could change, you know, tomorrow morning for all I know.
Right.
Now, what I find interesting along those lines is I'm pretty sure it was Dynamite that picked up the Dable Brothers stuff. You know, and that's another case where we were just talking about Dynamite getting... Harris and some of this other stuff.
I think you're right, yeah.
They're making some really smart acquisitions and strengthening their line. And again, I really see Dynamite being the next one to make a play for going Premiere. You know, if they think they can make it or if it seems worth doing because it pans out for IDW.
Mm-hmm.
Equally likely, though, that IDW sales are really not going to make any kind of a massive swing by moving to the front half. Because a lot of people are either getting their books or not, and I don't know how many retailers are suddenly going to say, oh, wow, I should pick up all these things in the middle of their runs because I now see them in the front half of previews, whereas I totally missed them before. They had a big enough presence in the back of previews that it's not like if a publisher was in the back of previews, didn't have their own little defined section like Boom, IDW, Devil's Due, and some of these others have. But we're just kind of lost in the postage stamps size solicits. You know, one of those moves up to the front half, that's a big deal.
You know, when I look at a previews, though, and, you know, it never really occurred to me until IDW got this quote-unquote status. Because for me, previews has always been Dark Horse, DC, and Marvel mm-hmm. kind of thing, you know. So every time I open it up, Dark Horse is always there. And then DC and the Marvel, or Marvel had their own book, you know, or whatever
yeah.
happened. But it's always been the same for me. And I, you know, I'm the kind of guy that would sit in my easy chair and flip from page one to page 400, and just kind of circle things with my pen, and then weed it down. And it really, for me, it really didn't matter what company was where in the book, kind of thing.
I'm the same way in so much as going through cover to cover, but for me, it did matter.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is it's very easy for stuff to get lost and just do not see it in the back half.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that's part of why Bob and I do the previews call, you know, every month is to, you know, talk on Skype with a bunch of people and see what they spotted in previews that we missed. There are thousands of items in here.
Oh yeah.
And you know, you flip page by page. And it's easy to like I said, to overlook something. You know, I had a couple of times this month in the current previews that, you know, this March 2010 one where, you know, I was seeing something online saying, oh, there's this one comic by so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, I should wait till the next previews and check it out. And then they say it's listed in the March 1. And I'm like, really? I've gone through the March previews. I filled out my March order. Haven't sent it in yet because I'm slow.
All right.
Had the March teleconference. Did the March previews spotlight episode. Did the March spotlight interviews episode. And was still clueless about this one. So it's very easy, like I said, for things to kind of fall under the radar. And if one of those publishers, you know, like a Red 5, less so with Radical because, again, they've got a couple of pages for themselves.
Right.
But one of those that, again, is just kind of listed in the back as a generic publisher, for lack of a better term. If one of those were to move to the front half, get their own section, you know, whatever, just the bigger space would spotlight their stuff and make it easier to find. So I think it can matter, but in the case of IDW that already had their own section, for all intents and purposes, yes, it was in the back half, all we're doing is moving those 100 pages further forward or whatever, I don't know that it's going to help.
Right.
I've always seen placement in previews as something that can hurt the further back you are, but not something that has the inverse effect of moving forward will increase sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like taxes. No matter how much they lower them, you're not going to make money.
Right.
It just
right.
doesn't happen that way. So, but it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens with IDW and, I think, Dynamite and stuff going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we start going through the actual top trades list itself?
Yeah, let's do that for sure.
Okay, top item. We got a nice high seller here with 11,892 estimated units. I love big numbers like this on this show. and that's Fables Volume 13, the Great Fables crossover. Now, what's interesting is this is one that only a third of it took place in Fables, another third took place in Jack of Fables, and the final third in The Literals, which was a three-issue miniseries. So, arguably, this was as much, say, a Jack of Fables story as anything else, but putting it under the Fables banner, smart move, gave it good sales, can't go wrong with that. Do you read Fables? I'm trying to remember.
No, I've not gotten onto Fables yet, I know. Very, very bad of me.
Good stuff. This is not necessarily one I would say, hey, start here. I'd always suggest starting at the beginning.
No, I'm going to start at the beginning for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely good
and
stuff.
And I heard the Cinderella book is pretty good, too.
Yeah, I'm really liking that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's one I could see going as a regular if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, how much longer is Jack of Fables going to go? And, you know, they've had some delays on Fables and stuff like that. You know, how's that going to pan out?
I can't believe this collects Fables up to 85. I didn't realize Fables was that high.
It's at 95 now. It's almost
at 95? Oh, my God.
Six issues from 100 or whatever.
Jeez.
Jack of Fables is closing in on issue 50.
Jeez, that's a lot to catch up on.
It's good stuff.
I know.
And note, I mean, these are strong sales.
Oh, very.
You well, know.
Now, how does this compare to the... I know I bring this up lately, but how is the Fables comic doing these days?
That is a good question.
Because we tend to see the Vertigo titles do better in trade.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because as I was prepping for this episode tonight, I filtered the list by each of the publishers on the trade side, and one of the things I noticed is when you do that by DC, I've got this column here of how many times has this shown up on the list before.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of double digits.
Mm-hmm.
A lot under DC. You got a lot of books that have shown up on the list, you know, a dozen or more times. As for how Fables is doing on the monthly side, they did not have an issue come out in February.
Okay.
So, give me just a minute. I still have not reworked my my file to have a list of everything, whether it shipped or not, and I need to do that in the Excel
file.
Well,
Cinderella came in at issue number 4 at 107, and that was a $2.99 comic. And that was above Marvel's Eye of the Camera, number 6, and just below Image United, number 0. So that's a pretty good place for it. Those are pretty... Getting a lot of praise these days for both the... Well, I don't know about Image United, but it's getting a lot of publicity,
so
I should say.
Fables 92 was at rank 100 in January on the comic list. It did 20,181 units.
So right around where Power Girl is for this month, then. Power Girl number 9.
Yeah, right right around there.
There, yeah.
But, you know, you look at that... Those sales of the 20,181, and compare that to those trade sales of 11,892, and I mean that's really good. I mean, Fables is doing not quite twice as well on the comic side as it is on the trade side.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, it's kind of a, you know, a 10-to-1 kind of a margin where you'll sell, for every copy of the trade, you'd sell about 10 of that of the component issues.
Right.
You know, so a 1-to-2 ratio is, I mean, but this is one of those things where the DC stuff on the trade side is just fundamentally different than most of the other publishers. Because you've got a lot of things that are not reorder activity, the new Fables, All-Star Superman Volume 2, stuff like that. But if you filter it down to just the DC reorder items, you got a handful of items that are too new to have been on, you know, double-digit number of times on this list, but most of the ones that are eligible for it are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got stuff that's been on 20 or more times. We've got Watchmen, which has been on 59 times. Now, I wanted to mention Watchmen and it having been on so many times because, I mean, obviously it's Watchmen. The question is, you know, what makes it so successful, whatever.
Right.
But that's putting the known sales getting not too far from a 250,000 within the direct market. And that's known total estimated reported sales. Technically, it's 234,792 estimated units. That is a sum of the estimated units of what's shown up on the list every time Watchmen's been on the list. Watchmen's old enough that the list at one point only covered the top 10 items. So if Watchmen wasn't in the top 10, it didn't get reported there. Those sales are not in this total. But one of the ones that's new enough that most of the time it's managed to make it on the list or whatever, there's another item that's got 59 times it's been on the list before. So in both cases, this gives us, you know, 60 months worth of data for these items. And that's the first volume of Walking Dead from Image. And with this additional 1,307 estimated units, because it's in rank 53, it's cracked 100,000 total estimated reported units.
That's great to see. It really is.
Now, if you filter the list by Image and just say, okay, you know, what all has Image done this month? You know, obviously, you know, Walking Dead's going to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
Every volume of Walking Dead actually is on there. We've also got Astounding Wolfman Volume 3. We've got Broken Trinity, the first volume of Chew, fourth volume of Pop Gun, and the fourth volume of Jack Staff. Every other item, though, is Walking Dead. So mm-hmm. they did... It actually only totals up to 8,798 units. But, you know, compare that to the, you know, 5,909, you know, non-Walking Dead units. Kirkman's still doing pretty well, but again, it's all Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Yes, you've got Astounding Wolfman there, but you don't have Invincible or most of his other properties he's done over the years. So, you know, Brit, I'm trying to think one or two of the other properties, but you know what I mean.
Right.
So, Kirkman certainly very strong seller. It's the closest almost any other publisher has to a Vertigo-ish kind of a line in terms of repeating sales, because most of these, except for obviously volumes 10 and 11 that are too new, have been on double-digit number of times on this list before. You know, so if you show up 38 times on the top 300 or top 100 going back far enough, the sales accumulate, and that's good. But, you know, it's interesting his other properties, again, specifically Invincible, don't seem to have that kind of sticking power in the market.
Are you all caught up on Walking Dead yourself?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, good.
I like it. It's one of those that I think the earlier issues are better than the later issues. Mm-hmm. I think he's coasting a little bit, but it's one of those that it's a roller coaster ride. You get some really good stuff, you get a little bit of a quieter period, and then he cranks it back up.
I've got the omnibus editions, and I'm slowly getting through them, but I really like them.
Yeah, no, he does. He does good stuff.
Number two, Kick Ass.
9,143 units for that premier hardcover. That's not bad at all.
No, that's pretty good.
Now, with the movie coming out or whatever, you know, this is one that it'll be interesting to see if it sticks on the list for a couple of months, if we get some good reorder activity or not. Really, this one could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, strong sales here. Once we get down to that third item, which is All-Star Superman Volume 2 trade paperback, we're down to 5,565 units. In some months, this would have been enough to top the list. And frankly, I'm glad that the top-selling one did over twice that. Personally, I thought All-Star Superman excellent series, both the first and the second volumes. This is one that I think we will see some activity over time. This did just, you know, a fraction of what the first volume did, which has accumulated up to 14,164 estimated units. So plenty of room for that. Mm-hmm. Now, rank number 4, we've got volume 47 of Naruto. It did 5,126 units. This is by far the highest thing for Viz or pretty much any manga. You know, the next manga, I think, would be Berserk Volume 33 at rank 10, which did 3,210 units. So I think, obviously, not all manga is created equal. It would be foolish to think it was, but Naruto is still doing very well. Now, are you reading the Star Wars Adventures at rank 5 here?
I get everything Star Wars, yes. And I really, really thought this was a great digest. It's great for kids. It's really good for those of you who love the original trilogy and grew up with Star Wars. This is a must-have because this takes place during The Empire Strikes Back when Luke is on Dagobah. And it is, as far as I know, it's one of those, you know, in continuity stories, and it's really, really cool. And there's no Han Solo, there's no Boba Fett, there's no nothing like that. It's just Luke and his training on Dagobah with Yoda, and they talk about, you know, the Force, and Ben Kenobi's in it, and it's great to see. But you really get to see more of Luke's training that went on there, and there's only so many minutes in the movie,
right?
And you kind of wonder, how, you know, it's one of those things where how long was Luke on Dagobah? Well, some people say he was there for a week. Some people say he was there for, you know, a couple of weeks. We don't know because...
Yeah, there's no way to tell from what we saw, yeah.
There's no way to tell, but one thing you can tell is that with the Millennium Falcon not having a hyperdrive, they kind of have to go through space at a certain speed, and you know they're down in within the caverns of the asteroid for quite a while fixing the ship. You know, when they finally left and had to go to Bespin, you know, that took them a while to get there. They didn't get there.
You've given
day.
This a lot more thought than I have.
I've given this a lot of thought throughout the years, John. But what's cool about this story is, and even to read the solicitation, you know, what is the dragon snake? What is the treasure? What is going on? But what's really cool to see, and they show it to you in the first few pages, is that the dragon snake king, it's a big monster, right? Like a big underwater you know, monster, was actually in Empire Strikes Back, but we never saw him. Do you remember the scene when R2 fell in the swamp and was spit out and was shot over Luke?
That's what spit him out. That
spit him out. This giant dragon snake, this giant dinosaur whale thing, swallowed R2 because he thought he was food, and it wasn't food because he's a droid, and he spit him out.
That's
and
funny.
So that is the premise of this, of Luke, you know, the dragon snake is there again, and he has to go fight him as part of his challenges and everything like that. But in the meantime, you know, he gets a little bit of a Jedi training, you know, all mental of what does it mean to be a Jedi, not just fighting with his lightsaber.
Got it. That sounds cool. So,
no, it's a very cool story. I highly recommend it for any Star Wars purist out there. This is a really, really fun story. And it's got some comedy in it, too, which is good to see.
Well, and it did 4,412 units. That's really close to how that second volume did of 4,478 units. So I think people who are reading it seem to be liking it, and it seems to be doing all right on the sales.
Mm.
Now, if we want to jump down a little bit, at rank 12, we got that fourth Starman omnibus. That did 2,607 units. It's down about 300 from how that fourth one did. But, you know, for an omnibus, that's not doing too bad at all.
Mm-hmm. I got to pick mine up. I've got the first three. I've not picked this one up yet.
Cool.
And this one has got not so much Starman proper, but the Starman 80-page giant, the crossover with Shazam, the Mist one-shot, and the great two-issue Batman Hellboy Starman story. Which, if you've not read that, I highly recommend it. That's one of my favorite Batman, Hellboy, or Starman stories. It's really, really cool.
I'm pretty sure I read that. I know I read all the other stuff. I think yeah. I got the Hellboy one.
It's more like a Batman story. I mean, Batman is the main character. He teams up with Hellboy in one, and the story continues with Starman, or vice versa. But it is a Batman story. Hellboy and Starman don't team up, I don't think. Or they may be in a panel or two, but it's not like a trio of heroes going to fight something evil.
Right.
More like a team up.
Back around that time, I was getting most of the Batman, crossovers of that ilk.
Mm-hmm. Well, you wonder, with the Hellboy library coming out, if Mignola and Dark Horse are going to have the rights to reprint this in their library edition.
Don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
But I don't think, because Mignola is a part of this book.
It all is going to come down to how much power he had when they wrote those contracts,
Yeah, yeah, you wonder.
Because
it's never been reprinted before. This is the first time that I know.
Hmm.
So I've got the originals downstairs, too. But cool. That's a great story. This may be my favorite omnibus of the, the crossover stories and everything.
Right.
He goes off into space. So
now at rank 16, we got DC Universe Origins trade paperback that did 2,318 units, and that was collecting the two-page origins and stuff from 52 Countdown to Final Crisis and a couple that I think were originally seen online, and I don't know if they had all gotten printed or not. But a lot of these were written by Mark Waid, Len Wein, stuff like that, and were nice kind of condensed two-page essential origin type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of cool that they had packaged those up, because there was the question of, when they collect 52 and things like that, what are they going to do with these? And this is what happened.
Right, and this kind of kicks off the new Who's Who that they're going to be launching later in the year as well.
I'm really looking forward to that, but I'm mm-hmm. a easy sell on that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, me too, for sure.
Now, one thing that's kind of interesting is at rank 20, we've got Ignition City Volume 1 trade paperback from Avatar. And that did 2,127 estimated units. That came out on February 24th. Now, what's interesting about that is if you go down to rank 252, we've got Ignition City Volume 1, the hardcover, that also came out on that same day. And it only did 343 units. And it's always kind of interesting to compare how the hardcover and the trade do. And it's a factor, I think, of timing, which comes out first, or in this case, if they come out at the same time, and then pricing. Because that trade paperback was $19.99, that hardcover was $27.99, and I believe they've got the same content. So it really shows, I think, that with some of the Avatar readers in this case, price wins out. I don't think it's a matter of preference over format so much as just, value for the money.
Well, let me talk to you about the format, because I've got a question. If you look at the solicitation for the trade paperback, it says that, this volume will be available in standard trade paperback, and then it's going to have a special hardcover featuring an exclusive cover that is limited to 2,000 units, and a special dual signed hardcover that is going to be limited to 400 copies. So you've got, you add those two up, you got 2,400 of the hardcover out there, but yet only 300 or so have sold.
Well,
does that mean they're sitting on,
no,
22,000 copies in a warehouse somewhere?
Is it limited to only 2,000
right.
units? Doesn't say they printed 2,000 units.
Right.
We do not know, because they had this information of how it was going to sell, presumably before they set that print run, depending what printer they use, some of the timing issues, whatever. What I don't know is...
Are they just way off the mark?
No.
No.
Not a matter of way off the mark. I mean, I don't know which version of the hardcover is at 252 there. Presumably it's that special edition, not that, uber special signed and limited edition.
Right.
Okay, so it's presumably the 343 out of the 2,000 units.
Right.
But they're just saying we're not going to print any more than this. They're not committing to printing that many.
Is there a time limit they set on that? Like, if they don't sell the 2,000, if they don't sell them within 5 years, are they going to stop, cap it off like at 1,500 then?
No. I think you misunderstand, because they had the information, the way the process works, December solicits came out. Retailers got it. Us readers got it. We came back to the retailers and said, yes, I like, hey, this is insane. I'm not going to get it. Whatever. Retailers took that. They put their orders together. They gave that to Diamond. Diamond takes that, compiles all that, says, well, we want to have a little extra, or we don't want to have any extra, or whatever.
Right.
Put their order together. They ship that to Avatar. Avatar says, oh, wow, we only did 300 and whatever, because it might have been a little higher, a little lower, whatever. And then they said, we're only going to print X amount. Now, they may have printed 400. They may have printed the full 2,000. Odds are, if you only had orders for around 343 units, you're going to, you know, print whatever financially makes the most sense.
Right.
Now, keep in mind, they've got other distribution channels they're going to go through. You may see this in bookstores, whatever. They've got the international market potentially to consider, and they've got convention sales to consider.
True.
So there are many, many ways they could do this. But it then comes down to, you know, who's hedging their bets by how much between the time it gets originally solicited and the orders go in and the time it comes out. Because, again, this was a December solicit that came out on February 24th. There's going to be some advance reorder activity. First off, there's not the final order cutoff because Avatar is not part of that. That's DC, Marvel, Image, and Dark Horse. With IDW getting added into the mix probably sometime this year. I know that's part of the deal with them becoming a premier publisher. But retailers are going to say, ooh, we didn't order enough. We've had more people saying we want this Ignition City hardcover. Let's add that. That becomes what would be essentially an advance reorder. Or in some cases, you could actually have same month kind of a reorder. In other words, if this had come out at the beginning of the month, on that, say, the first of the month, you could have 4 weeks of same-month reorder activity that piles into what we consider the first month sales.
Mm-hmm.
So, in this case, yeah, they probably printed well over the 343, but I'd be shocked if they did a full 2,000.
I always think it's kind of a dangerous game to play, though, because you go out there and you say, hey, it's limited to 2,000, which is kind of enticing you to say, you as a buyer, well, I better buy this now because it's going to be sold out.
Oh, yeah, it's an order now.
But yet, when you're the publisher and you come back and see that, oh, my God, it only sold 300. Well, that could be right on target of what they're expecting to do.
Exactly.
Or it could be way below expectations that they wanted. You know, it could be, you know.
It's all a game. This is the limited quantities. Exactly. Call your operator now to order or whatever.
Right.
It's the preemptive, we sold out kind of a thing. And really, any time a publisher says, hey, we sold out before it got released or whatever, that means they were really tight on you know, hey, we thought we were going to sell X. We printed X plus a fraction of a percent to cover major damages, but we're not overprinting because we want to be able to say, ooh, demand exceeded supply. It must be popular.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, are you, as a publisher, are you better off saying it's a limited edition, or are you better off saying it's limited edition to 2,000 copies?
If you're going to say it's a limited edition, you may as well say what you're planning on limiting it to.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're not playing fair. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You limited it. Well, limited to what? You know, it's a nebulous marketing ploy, whereas this is at least a slightly more specific marketing ploy.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I mean, to me, this is fair, because if somebody's wanting that limited collectible, they know they've only got 2,000, you know, units out there to be getting from or whatever. Whereas it's a slightly different case of the, hey, we sold out at the distribution level or whatever. Because to me, that's a bad thing.
Right.
That just means that you couldn't gauge demand accurately enough, or you're playing games to get a cheap press release out. And really, the idea should be to fill the demand as adequately as possible. Have enough copies out there that everyone who wants a copy gets a copy, and, you know, not flood the market and not, you know, underserve the market.
Right.
But I think it's interesting, though, there's such a dichotomy between the 2,127 estimated units for the trade paperback, the 343 units on the same day for the hardcover with an $8 price difference. So it makes sense there's a bit of a difference. But, you know, it really comes down to, do people prefer the hardcover or the trade or whatever? And I think it varies based on the property and the specifics.
Well, let me ask you this. And, you know, because Augie brought this up on his Pipeline podcast this week. He was kind of going on about the Sin City trade paperback and how it's in its 11th printing. Well, you know, how many units are in each printing? You know, where is it capped off?
It varies. It comes
it
down
varies.
To...
So, you, I mean, right. So when they say 11th printing, that could be different from another company saying it's in its 6th printing, you know, as far as more units made for that printing or less units made for that printing.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah. I mean, the printing that DC's going to do, say, on Watchmen...
Right.
...is going to be really different than if they were to ever do another printing for, you know, one of these...
Like Killing Joke or something like that.
Well, I was actually going to go with like the Final Crisis Aftermath okay. run.
Right. Will that ever get reprinted?
I really doubt it.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, that's down at rank 91, and it sold 972 units.
Right.
And again, this is one of those cases of, you know, some of the stuff sells so bad on the monthly side and then sells 1,000 or less or whatever on the trade side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, damn.
Well, that's funny. I mean, we were talking about it earlier. I mean, Augie says here that Sin City's on its 11th printing, but yet it has really never shown up in our list.
Oh, we've seen it on the list a couple of times, certainly
I mean,
when
a
the
few
movie's
times,
coming
but,
out. But...
we're talking about Walking Dead, you know, in the hundreds of thousands, you know, now hundreds of thousands, you know, but Sin City is, I mean, you'd think it would be on the list for, I don't know, 400
but
units a month or something like that.
It also comes down to where some of those units being sold.
Right,
when
that's
true. When
you've
got a printing, you're dealing with the entire English-speaking marketplace for the most part, not just what sells through Diamond to comic book retailers.
True, so it could be in the bookstores, it could be...
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are certain books I would expect to be able to see if I walked into pretty much any Borders or Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect to see Watchmen, I would expect to see Fables, I would expect to see Walking Dead, probably Why the Last Man, Sin City,
right.
I'm trying to think of some of the others that, Buffy, things that are almost guaranteed to be there.
A couple of Star Wars books here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, are you going to go see some of the more obscure things that we've got on the list? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, down at rank 131, we've got the Models, Inc. graphic novel, and that was the miniseries that Marvel did that had Mary Jane Watson, Patsy Walker, Jill Jared, Chili Storm, and Millie the Model.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I thought it was an entertaining story. It was one that I was puzzled why they even bothered to publish. But, you know, hey, you've got the comics, compile them together, kick it out as a trade, why not? What do you got to lose?
Mm-hmm.
It sold 617 estimated units. Three-digit sales, and not even strong three-digit sales at that.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think we're going to see that on any bookshelf in any Barnes & Noble or Borders?
Right.
I'm going to say not very likely. So, you know, it comes and goes. But to me, is it interesting to know what printing some of the stuff is? Yeah, kind of. You know, but some of this is just how long has Sin City been out? How long has Watchmen been out? How long has Walking Dead Volume 1 been out? You know, they're going to have to do printings over time because they're not going to print everything up front that they think they'd ever need. That's just bad
right.
business. Now, at rank 88, we've got the Fantastic Four by Jonathan Hickman Volume 1 because, of course, hey, let's renumber the volumes for Fantastic Four. Why they don't just put Fantastic Four Volume 4 for all of them, I don't know. But this did, it's a premier hardcover. It did 1,009 estimated units. Now, this is the stuff by Jonathan Hickman that I think is just terrific. You know, pencil by Dale Eaglesham, he's doing some great stuff. This had a cover by Alan Davis, how can you go wrong with that? It sold just over 1,000 copies. And, you know, to me, that's really kind of disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a strong storyline. It's got, you know, five issues worth of stuff. Now, granted, it's a $20 hardcover for only 120 pages. I think they might do better if they'd kind of had, you know, a bit thicker of a hardcover.
Yeah.
But that again, is not one of those that makes me think people who are waiting for the trade, or in this case the hardcover, are really coming out and buying it in that format. Now, we talked a little last month about the Star Trek movie, and you were asking about Star Trek Nero. We've got the trade here at rank 81, having done 1,060 units. So, you know, it really, I think, fits in on Nero's side of what happened in the movie, which we get hinted at but not explicitly told in a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say this is definitely a tie-in to the movie in a very strong sense, and here it is again, not much better than 1,000 units. You know, now, also with the DVD and stuff, there's no indication this even exists for people to go find it if they're interested, but, you know, hey, that happens.
Well, no, they do, and I think I mentioned in the last podcast we did, Abrams does allude to this trade paperback, or is it it's the Countdown trade paperback. That's what he alludes to, not so much the Nero one. Yeah, now, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Countdown, I thought, was a really integral tie-in.
Yeah.
You know, everything Spock explains at the campfire scene or whatever is in that trade.
Right.
So, but it's one of those things that before we get out of the top 100 or whatever, we're down below 1,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and really we're below 2,000 before we get out of the top 25.
Did you read the Nero one yet?
Yeah, I did. I read it in the monthly issues. I liked it.
Okay. I haven't gotten it yet, and I'm getting the Spock Reflections.
I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. I think they're doing good stuff. I started reading the adaptation of the movie, and I'm liking that too.
Now, are they adding anything in the adaptation of the movie that they were talking about in Countdown? Because it kind of...
Not,
you know...
so far, but the first issue really covers the... up to the destruction of...
A Vulcan?
No, of the ship.
Oh, the ship, Titan. Is it Titan?
No. It's... Crap, I'm blanking on the name. Kirk's father's ship.
Someone's going to let us know.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. The Kelvin.
The Kelvin.
Yeah.
That's it, the Kelvin.
So, I mean, they tell quite a bit. It's good. I'd have to, you know, reread it, watch the movie again. There's a couple of things that I think are just a hair off, but nothing that's out of continuity or a big deal or whatever.
And now, part is that of it the same is, creative team that did Countdown and Nero and Reflections?
I believe so, but I'd have to double check.
That'd
I'm pretty
be good
sure.
if it is.
I mean, they're doing quite a bit around the movie and doing some good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for a follow-up, like a novel or something. Because
well,
I think I'd read that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot IDW can do with the property of Star Trek. I mean, they've essentially turned the original generation now into two franchises.
They have, and they're going to keep continuing with the next generation.
Yeah, I think they're going monthly with that.
In old continuity. And that's probably pretty smart.
Yeah, there's no reason not to.
Yeah, yeah, because it could exist. You know, there's no doubt about that. So,
well, technically, I think it does exist. I mean, if you think about it, any time Kirk and Company or Picard and Company or Sisko and Company or whoever... Yeah, Janeway and Company, for that matter, or even Archer and Company, traveled back in time.
Yeah.
Prior to that point in time where Nero first shows up, it's the same timeline.
It's the same timeline, right?
So, fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And again, somewhere that IDW is having quite a bit of success with,
mm-hmm.
and one that I think it makes more sense to be kicking out a lot of titles just because there's so many branches of the franchise.
Oh, absolutely. What else we got? Oh, the Essentials. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
11 o'clock, the guys in 11 o'clock comics were talking about what a rumor they heard, but they didn't announce where the rumor was coming from. So I don't know if it was like in the comic book shop or whatever, but the Essentials may be going away from Marvel. And this month we've got the Essential Daredevil Volume 5 coming in at rank 35, which is still pretty strong for an Essential, John. I don't know... why they would want to get if the rumors are true, I don't know why they'd want to get rid of this property. I could see him scaling back and do like,
well, this format, really.
Or the format. I could see him scaling back and do like one a month or maybe one every 2 months. I see that because they're getting into material that may not sell as well as the old Silver Age stuff. You know, there's the 70s stuff, which they're pretty much all into now. And even some of the 80s stuff, isn't the greatest of quality yet?
Well, I think part of it is this did 1,723 units, not bad. Again, rank 35, so pretty strong. But it's one of those that I think they may be seeing a slight softening of the sales for the Essential line.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've certainly cut back on both that and pretty much completely stopped the showcases.
Mm-hmm.
I was really into those for a bit, but then it got to the point where, DC's doing the Chronicles and stuff like that. If I can get a, yes, slightly more expensive version, but in color, I will.
And they take up space in the shelf or in the long box, for sure.
These things are great value, but, you get $20, you get, 488 pages here or whatever, 500 pages?
Yeah.
It's almost too much to be reading. It's almost too good of a value for the money in some respects in that way. Mm-hmm. And like you said, as they're getting to the newer material, I think they're going to start hitting where either they'd rather be doing it in trades as regular things or just do it in color, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think part of it is they've had to scale back how frequently they're doing some of these as a response to just how well they're selling and how much material they've got.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not surprised they're doing that. I'm not horribly upset that they're doing that. I mean, I got the essentials I really wanted, which is like the Uhatmus and some stuff like that. I think it's a good format. I think it's a good entry point. I think while they may want to scale back on doing new ones, I would like to see them keep the ones they have out kind of in print, because I think that's a good way for people to get early issues of Fantastic Four or Daredevil or whatever.
Well, and have you noticed that they've been going up in price?
Yes.
All the essentials are at $19.99 now. They used to be at like $15.99 or $16 or $17.99. Across the board, they're at $17.99.
Times are tough.
I know.
Yeah,
but you know what? A lot of people may not want to pay $20 for a black and white phone book,
Yeah. If they can do a phone book in color, even if it's $25, $30, if you could do a $25...
Did you see what they're doing?
No.
They are bringing out the Tomb of Dracula as a color trade paperback. Let me see if I can find it.
It just seems to me if they can do a color phone book size kind of a thing, and with the 70s and 80s, the pre-digital print stuff, where it was essentially on newsprint back in the day anyways.
Right.
If they could do that and keep the price roughly $1 an issue of content, I'd be all over that.
Well, this is, they brought out the four essentials of Tomb of Dracula, which they edited, right? They took out some of the adult content in it, art-wise anyway, with the slinky women. And then they brought out the two omnibus editions. And now they're bringing out Tomb of Dracula Volume 1 trade paperback, collecting the original Tomb of Dracula 1 through 12 for $24.99. $25. So about, $2 an issue.
That's not too bad.
Not too bad.
Still rather it be closer to $1, but still.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be interesting to see kind of where both the publishers go on some of the stuff going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're starting to see where they've printed, quite a bit of their Golden Age, a lot of their Silver Age material. I think there's a little bit of a dead zone of material from the late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
That hasn't made it into collected editions yet, but...
Well, I want to see a good masterwork of Iron Fist and Luke Cage. I think that would be nice to see.
I don't know if I'd put that in a masterwork.
Well, some color, though. I mean, they've been...
Again, color phone book, yeah.
Color would be nice. Something color, because I've read those in the essentials, and boy, I just really miss the art.
Yeah.
Well,
and again, that's part of why I'm veering away from the essentials and the showcases, is I like my comics in color.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old-fashioned that way, I guess. One other thing I wanted to mention was down at rank 186, 187, we've got volumes 1 and 2 of Irredeemable, both having done 444 estimated units. I find that kind of interesting because this is reorder activity for both, but that first volume is at a $9.99 price point, whereas the other one's at $16.99. So what that tells me is that intro pricing for that first trade is really paying off, and it's indicating that people are willing to go for that more expensive second trade to keep going with the story. But hey, it's Mark Waid, it's good stuff. I certainly think that's a series worth reading myself.
And when does
Incorruptible
is coming out April 7th.
Cool.
So we'll see how that does.
Yeah.
And that is going to be four issues for $16.99.
I still think the four issues per, again, it's a little bit thinner of a format that I kind of like, but it seems to be coming a bit more standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of have to wait and see on that. Yeah.
Now, if we look at the price breakdown, we had 46 items at the $9.99 price point, 48 at the $14.99 price point, 40 at the $19.99 price point, and 29 at the $24.99 price point. another 21 at $10.99, another 23 at $17.99. But it's looking at that, really actually quite a few fell into the $14.99 or under part of the list, 160 of the items actually. So if you were to look at what you could get for under $20, you could get 243 of the items. I think we are seeing a lower price points on a lot of these things. The fact that the high value was again under $60 with the $59.99, I think is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think the publishers may be starting to shy away a little from doing too many of those, you know, $100 price point items. In this economy, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Well, did you see the solicits for DC this month?
No, I have not seen them yet.
Boy, they don't really have anything going on as far as trades go.
Cool. Saves me money.
They really scale back. I know. In all honesty, I don't think there's one thing that I really want. I mean, not. I should rephrase that. Nothing that I want to buy at this time from DC. Maybe a little bit later on. But nothing like really caught my eye saying, I got to have that.
Well, I mean, in the last previews, they had $100 to $200 worth of Blackest Night trades, or hardcovers, actually.
Yes, they did.
So maybe they could have spaced those out. Maybe that would have done better on sales, whatever. But kind of makes sense to dump them all at once to a certain degree, too.
Right.
Be very interesting when those come out, how that does for DC. You add that to the dominance they have on the reorder activity, and that could be a very strong month for DC on the trade side.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else you want to talk about on the top-selling stuff?
No, I think we covered quite a lot in this episode.
Cool. So what you got coming up on your show?
Well, by the time this airs, March will be over, and I'll be just wrapping up my Jack Kirby month for the month of March. I did Steve Ditko for February. I did Jack Kirby for March. And my last show for March will be on Commandy and Devil Dinosaur.
Cool.
And then I've got my new podcast I'm launching on digital comics, but more to come on that.
Sounds exciting. I think digital is really, it's poised to be a definite game changer, certainly with the iPad coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if a publisher can find a way to consistently and repeatedly make money in digital and creators get wind of that, it could really hurt print comics.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of potential for that, and I'm curious to see where all that goes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, it's coming on strong. It's not going to go away anytime soon. But what digital also allows you to do is these, you know, independent publishers are going to be able to mass produce their work. And so I think we're going to see a lot of new comics come out because of it.
Well, it's a fundamental game changer because the long tail effect truly comes into play. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people bandy that term around with print comics, but really one of the hallmarks of the long tail, and if you read the book, it talks about things on, you know, digital distribution channels where you've got zero cost for stocking the item, because in a lot of cases it's just bits, be it on iTunes or Rhapsody or, you know, whichever specific thing.
Right.
And if all I've got to do is put together the content, eat the cost on that, upload that, be it to Panelfly, Pullbox Online, or whatever some of these other ones are. I'm not really up to speed on all this, mm-hmm, in terms of who's currently out there. At that point, my out-of-pocket expenses are done. Everything that comes in is, I don't want to say gravy, but you know what I mean. It's income. There's no additional printing costs. There's no shipping costs. There's no distribution costs. There's none of those hassles. And where it becomes fundamentally different is once you got your stuff out there, it's perpetually, quote-unquote, in print. You don't have the issue that I think Marvel and DC are starting to hit, as well as maybe some of the other publishers, of suddenly half the stuff we've got just we ran out.
Right.
We print the third volume, I think it was Starman or whatever, that was out of print for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or not. Do you have enough orders to warrant that, or how does that go? Those issues go away. So I see it as a definite game changer. It's just a question of, is the business model there? Is it profitable or not? And I think it opens comics up to a very different audience, because I know I'm very much in the boat, and I'm sure Bob is too, where we like the tangible aspect. If I'm going to pay money, I want a physical thing.
Right.
Now, granted, I've got a whole room full of these physical things, and it takes up space, and I get that, but I don't have quite the same attachment for paying for bits. So, but right. younger people but, do. So,
well, the other thing is, I mean, and Derek kind of made a good point on his podcast this week regarding the whole email that kind of came down. And I've been thinking about this way longer than from what that email came down last week that we were all a part of. But, you know, your comic books, for any old person, you know, how often do you read it more than once? You know, you take it, it's disposable income for really a disposable product, almost like a newspaper. But I think we value it more because there's less pages than a newspaper and it costs more money.
Oh, certainly, because it costs so damn much, yeah.
Right.
But I think that's part of why digital comics could really do wonders potentially for the sales numbers we're talking about, because there are going to be some people who decide, this particular story was really good, I do want a tangible copy of that.
Right.
Now, there may not be tons or whatever, but if it can act as a replacement entry ramp to the long-gone days of the spinner rack, that could be good too.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think the digital aspect is going to be very interesting to watch over the next couple of years, certainly with the iPad, again, that gives it a viable platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a cell phone, so...
I just think comics, they shouldn't be, you know, the comics online should be dirt cheap, though, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's one thing about a song that you pay 99 cents for, because you can listen to it over and over again, throw it in shuffle, take it with you on your iPad, or your iPad, or your iPod, pardon me.
Your eye something comics, or other.
Your eye something or other, or, you know, whatever. But your comic, even if you buy it digitally, you're still not going to read it twice. You know, you might, but it'd be nice to have a digital collection of it. I mean, you can easily store it on a hard drive. My God, it's not going to go anywhere, you know, but I don't know. It might just be fun to have. But there's a lot, and there's another thing that's out there. There's so many public domain characters and so many PDFs out there in different formats of all these characters that they are going to find new life, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
That's one of the topics I'm going to talk about in my early episodes.
I think that's a great idea.
My podcast is going to launch for its real number one episode on April 3rd when the iPad gets released. So
cool. I look forward to hearing that. Should be a lot of fun.
Should be cool, man. What about you? What's coming up?
Oh, let's see. This episode is going to go up on March 31st, so we will have just talked about on the Weekly Comics Spotlight Green Arrow 31, X-23 number one, and Green Hornet Year One number one.
Ah, very cool.
Bob and I both had kind of mixed feelings on that Green Hornet, and we're curious how this Year One thing does.
Yeah, wait, back up. Which Green Hornet comic? Because there's three of them.
We talked about the Kevin Smith Green Hornet.
Okay.
On episode 134 of the Weekly Comics Spotlight. And then episode 136, which I have yet to record, but will go up between recording this now and releasing this episode, is Green Hornet Year One, number one. I think that's the Matt Wagner one.
Okay.
So we're curious to see how that miniseries compares. And then next week on the Weekly Comic Spotlight, we're going to talk about Superman 698. It turns out we've only talked about Superman in Action Comics about once a year. When we realized that, it's like, oh, we should pick that. We're going to do Nemesis number one from Marvel.
Oh, very cool. I'll be interested in that one, too.
And then we're kind of doing comic is kind of doubling up on us. We're doing Hunter's Fortune 3 and 4, because apparently they're both getting released the same week.
You guys did you doubled up on Batman.
Batgirl and Red Robin.
Which I thought was cool. I liked how you did that. I mean, it's a two-part story. You might as well do it, right?
Yeah, when we have times like that, it just makes sense to do it. And we've done that a few times. We did that with the Hulk Alpha Omega. And the other thing I think we're going to talk about this week, this past one that we just released but I haven't recorded yet, is also going to be the Days Missing hardcover from Archaea.
Oh, okay.
Got the hardcover, read the individual issues.
Excellent.
But, yeah. So we got all that. Bob and I are going to talk about the top-selling comics, of course. No doubt talk some more about the IDW stuff. And then it's going to be getting up pretty close to when we do the previews teleconference, which I believe is going to be April 9th. Check the comicbookpage.com forum for more details there. That will also be the deadline for the preview spotlight 30, which will go up around the middle of the month. So pretty much same old, same old. You know, like I said, I'm just trying to catch up on some of my reading and stuff. Bob started a thread on our forum of just how many comics have you read today? Kind of a good reminder of, oh yeah, I should read some comics.
I read none today.
That's where I'm at too. But
I have two kids.
I'm into the current shipment of DCBS, so I'm happy.
Hey, by the time I talk to you next, I will have been to C2E2.
Cool. Definitely look forward to hearing about that.
So we'll talk about that. Yeah, looking forward to that. I got my press pass approved. Going to stay with Ian Levenstein of Comics Timing.
Cool. He's a great guy. Does a good show.
And, yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun. I plan on going to the Around Comics. Oh, you know what? I should bring this up. I'm going to go to the Around Comics closing party. They're, you know, their podcast is being, what's the best way to do it? They're retiring, I should say.
They're spinning it down so they can maybe replace it with something else now that Caters has moved to, Baltimore?
Yeah, Tom's in Boston area, Boston area. And let's see, he's still doing The Flash. And Chris is on 11 O'Clock Comics. But I wanted to let you know, I think our listeners would be interested to know that the panels are up at C2E2. And our good buddy Ron Richards of iFanboy is going to be on a panel with Heidi McDonald. And it is called Old Media, New Media, Comics Media. It's going to be Friday at 7:45. As the internet, mobile devices, and social networking continue to change how we gather information and get entertained, online comics media outlets like podcasts are quickly evolving to keep pace. Join moderator Heidi McDonald and representatives from Comics Alliance, Comics Worth Reading, which is probably Joanna, iFanboy, and other comic sites to find out how they stay on top of the changing landscape.
Cool.
So if you're going to be in Chicago going to C2E2, that'd be a good panel to check out. I'll be coming into Chicago at that time, so I don't know if I'll be able to make it or not, but hopefully I will.
So. No, it sounds like a good panel, and Ron's a good guy to have on that.
Well, either Ron or Connor is going to be on it.
All the iFanboy guys. I mean, yeah, congratulations to them because they got, I don't say bought out, but acquired or partnered with, I forget who it was.
Graphically,
yeah.
Well, and they're still with Revision 3, too. They're a player, man.
I mean, yeah, I was always impressed when they were doing the video stuff. I mean, I have a hard enough time editing the audio stuff.
Oh, I know.
But, you know, those guys have put in the time, put in the hours. They do professional stuff, and they're just good guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to see they've had some good success with this and are continuing to go with it and hopefully continuing to enjoy it. So that's just great. So anything else? That pretty much do it.
That'll do it, man.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside of Diamond Comics distribution channels is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.